The following is a rebroadcast of Studio Tulsa. This program first aired last year.
Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today spent a number of years examining links between the food we eat and how we feel. Leslie Korn is a clinical traumatologist specializing in mental health nutrition and integrative medicine. Over the decades, she's been a clinical fellow at Harvard Medical School. She's worked at Massachusetts General's Trauma Clinic and was a Fulbright Fellow in the jungles of central Mexico. In 1975, she founded the Center for Traditional Medicine, a natural medicine public health clinic in rural indigenous West Mexico. Her latest book, The Good Mood Kitchen, begins with a simple belief that nutrition affects mental health. Poor nutrition exacerbates mental illness and affects mental health, and optimal nutrition can help treat and alleviate illness. The book helps readers assess their unique digestive styles and nutritional needs, offers substitute foods for problem foods and ingredients, and helps navigate gluten sensitivities and other allergies. Leslie Korn is the author of 7 books, including Nutritional Essentials for Mental Health, and her latest book is titled The Good Mood Kitchen, Simple Recipes and Nutritional Tips for Emotional Balance. It's published by Norton, and she joins me today by phone here on Studio Tulsa. Leslie Korn, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich, for having me.
Your new book, The Good Mood Kitchen, talks about something called mood-savvy nutrition. What do you mean by mood-savvy nutrition?
I mean that what we eat affects our mood. We're often told about eating for our physical health, but we less often pay attention to our mental and emotional health. And what we eat has a direct effect on our mood, on our energy, our ability to sleep. It can affect depression and anxiety, even panic attacks. And so I encourage everyone to eat for their mood. Mood follows food.
Can you give us an example of how a food can affect, say, someone prone to panic attacks?
Absolutely. We know that certain foods, such as refined sugar, refined flour, and additives such as MSG, for example, or aspartame, are called excitotoxins. They can excite the neurons in the brain. And particularly in very sensitive people, they can create an overactivity in the brain that can contribute to panic attacks. And the other thing, particularly around food, that can contribute to panic attacks is that some people, and one of the themes of my book is that there's no one right diet for everyone. Some of us are vegetarians biologically and genetically, and some of us are carnivores, and some of us are in between. But if we don't eat according to our genetic and biological heritage, we can get, not to get too overly scientific here, but we can get too blood alkaline, and that can give rise to hyperventilation, anxiety, and panic. And so I see this a lot in people who are practicing a vegetarian or even vegan diet, who are getting overly alkaline and when really they need animal protein. So those are a few ways that food can affect panic and anxiety.
How does one find what their genetic and biological predisposition is?
Well, I begin with everyone by asking them to get in touch with their inner experience of how they feel when they eat certain foods. Because the first problem we all face is that we're conditioned to not really be in touch with the relationship between what we eat and how we feel. We gobble food down. We think that all of our symptoms should be fixed with taking a pill. And so we're really quite dissociated. We're disconnected from our inner experience of how food affects us. That's the first step. I ask people, pay attention to how you feel when you eat certain foods. Do you feel better when you eat meat? Do you feel better when you eat fish? Or do you feel better when you eat a more carb-heavy diet? That's the first step. But then after that, there are different laboratory tests that we can do to check metabolism. And what we're doing is we're checking the rate of oxidation of carbohydrates in the body. For example, I have patients from northern Alaska who are Inuit by origin. They remain living in their country of origin with their genetic heritage evolved to digest lots of fat and some protein, certainly, and very low carbs. and their metabolism spins very fast. In contrast, someone from India or someone with a genetic heritage from the tropics will do very well on lots of vegetables, fruits, legumes. Their metabolism spins a little bit slower. And so it's not unlike a car. When we buy a car, we have a car that takes diesel or it takes 97 octane. It's really understanding and identifying what that heritage is. And the second stage, even before you get to a lab test, is think about where your ancestors are from. For example, people from Ireland. What do the people who are genetically evolved from Ireland eat? They ate salmon and seaweed. They eat a very mixed diet. Look at what peoples in Eastern Europe eat, or peoples in Africa eating blood and milk, for example. So I ask people then to do almost a family history where they can identify what did my ancestors eat and what kept them healthy. So there are different stages of exploring your metabolic function and your genetic heritage.
Now, you yourself write that you're a recovering vegetarian. And was it because you discovered that your oxidation level was not necessarily that slow and it was not the best way for you to go?
Absolutely.
Now, how long were you a vegetarian?
27 years. And I was a vegetarian for the reasons many of us are. We love animals. We don't want to eat them. And I still have little pangs in my heart when I eat animal protein, but I also have learned to give thanks to that animal for lending me and giving me its body to survive. There's no such thing in the natural world as veganism. We travel the world studying indigenous cultures. You won't see veganism anywhere as a natural evolutionary function. It is a function of our mental, emotional, spiritual decision that we love animals, and that's a lot of the decisions that people make. But I discovered that my blood levels were low. We need, for example, vitamin B12 for cognitive function, and one of the first things to fall away is cognitive function if you're not getting enough B12, and you only get that from animal protein. And there are a number of things like saturated fats. And while we do get some saturated fats from nuts, for example, and some seeds, the best source of saturated fats are going to be things like raw butter and animal proteins. And so for me, once I started learning the science of nutrition, I understood that there was no one right diet for everyone and that we are all along a spectrum. And I'll tell you, since I made the switch, and I've seen the switch of many of my patients as well, I have much greater cognitive clarity and capacity and emotional stability as well. So that was my personal story.
Yeah. You alluded to finding your ancestral diets. Now, given that most Americans come from, you know, and even most people in the world now, Your heritage comes from all over the place. How do you figure out what are the best foods for you based on that idea of ancestral diets?
Indeed, because we are a mix. We are a mix of our parents. Let's begin right there. Just like you have some of the personality of your father, but you've got the nose and the mouth of your mother. Maybe you've got the eyes. Maybe you think the way your mother does, but you're emotionally tuned like your dad. Whatever it is, we have what's called a dominance. We have a dominating factor. And so people can, again, get in touch with what foods make them feel good. We have an epidemic of eating what's called the SAD diet, the standard American diet that makes us sad. And then we get GERD, we get colitis, we get constipation and diarrhea, and we think, oh, there's something wrong with us. I need to take a pill. I need to fix this somehow externally without recognizing that it's because we're not putting the right fuel into our body. And so, again, it begins with being aware of who you are and then asking your parents, your grandparents, doing the research about where you came from. And then, of course, you can work with a practitioner who can look at your metabolic type. There are complex glucose tolerance tests to do that can give you feedback on how quickly you digest glucose, because that's kind of the measure of how quickly your engine functions. I do tissue mineral analysis as well to check that. So you have a range of options from going over to Romania, traveling to Austria, going to Africa and meeting your relatives and looking at the wonderful yams or roots or animals. My people's from Eastern Europe, and so I grew up on lots of beets and fermented yogurt, which, by the way, you can't do better than a food like beets for your mental health. So I think you engage in this connection with understanding the profound relationship between where you come from and the kinds of foods that will fuel you.
Now, you mentioned you say no to the standard American diet, but right after that you say yes to comfort foods. Now, I assume you mean a slightly different definition of comfort food than most people mean with comfort food.
Yes, because the failure of any diet, so-called, is that it's too hard to keep. We medicate ourselves with food. Food is comforting. Food is about and should be about connection and warmth and sharing, which we don't have a whole lot of in our modern life oftentimes. And so the same thing, food is chemistry, and we eat food to soothe ourselves at times. And there's nothing wrong with that. But be aware of foods that can soothe you truly, that won't lead to side effects. So rather than eating a sugar donut, which will lead to inflammation in the body and therefore will lead to depression, because we now know that depression is a dis-ease of inflammatory process, how about a wonderful sweet potato to satisfy that sweet tooth with a dollop of raw butter and some sea salt, which supports your adrenal health, and you're satisfying your urge. Or let's go even further. How about making a recipe from the Good Mood Kitchen called a chocolate mocha smoothie? There's no reason you can't have chocolate. Chocolate is a wonderful brain food. It's very good for cognitive function, very good for increasing your energy. But the problem with chocolate is it's usually coupled with sugar. So get some pure organic cocoa. Add, if you want, a shot of espresso, which is medicine for the brain, and then add some coconut and some coconut fat and some maybe some almond milk and some stevia, a natural sweetener, and you have a wonderful midday pick-me-up or a comfort food. You know, a lot of women crave chocolate because it's rich in magnesium, and we think, oh, I'm just craving chocolate. I don't know why, but understanding that our cravings and our need for comfort is a way that our body and our brain is saying, I need this. So let's investigate why we need it and then choose a comfort food that's actually good for us rather than will harm us.
Now, you mentioned stevia, and stevia shows up quite a bit in there. And this was something I was unfamiliar with. I guess it is a natural sweetener found in the Amazon. Is that right?
Yes. It's a plant. And you might even be able to grow it in Tulsa because it loves warmth and humidity. And you can grow it in your backyard greenhouse. Stevia is a wonderful plant, and it's about 100 times sweeter than sugar. And I recommend to all of my patients and all of the groups that I speak to get a bottle of liquid stevia. The powder's a little bitter, and so people can get turned off from that, but and a few drops in a smoothie. I put it in recipes. For example, I teach children how to make healthy chocolate almond joys. Three of the best foods in the world for the brain, chocolate, coconut, and almonds. And that way they don't feel deprived. These are especially children with diagnoses of ADHD and hyperactivity. And they don't want to go off their sugar. Well, go off sugar, but let's find a good alternative, and that's stevia. And so you can use it in muffins that you might bake. You can use it in smoothies. You can use it in your tea as well.
My guest today is Leslie Korn. She specializes in integrative medicine and mental health nutrition. She's founder of the Center for Traditional Medicine and the author of The Good Mood Kitchen, Simple Recipes and Nutrition Tips for Emotional Balance. Now, how did you first get into this idea of using nutrition as a way, because you're trained as somebody who works in clinical mental health how did you find this nutrition as the way to finding people's emotional balance and helping them stay mentally stable, if you will?
I began my journey in this actually in the jungle of Mexico when I was running a health clinic there. I was there for 10 years the first time. And while I was there, I began learning from the people, the indigenous people who live there. There were no doctors, no roads, no electricity. I was running a health center, and I learned from the women and the men. I'll give you an example. One of the Sunday was a special day for slaughtering, and the men were slaughtered a cow for the whole village to eat. And I watched one of the men climb a tree, and he pulled down about 3 or 4 green papaya. And as I watched him, he sliced the papaya skin off the fruit, and it was oozing a white liquid. And he then lay that skin all over this beef to tenderize it. What is in that liquid? That is papain. That is a proteolytic enzyme. And so later, when I went back to Harvard to study nutrition, I discovered that papain, which is also found in Adolph's meat tenderizer, hopefully no one's using it, is used as an anti-inflammatory. We use it to treat pain and to treat depression. And so I really marveled at the connection between indigenous knowledge and the science of people's living traditional lives, learning from nature, and the connection to what we know in Western science. And I began my path there and have been on it ever since, working with, over 40, 50,000 hours of clinical care. What I've noticed working with people with emotional distress, people with trauma, anxiety, depression, insomnia, any kind of emotional distress, they always, always, always had digestive problems. And when we could help their digestion, when we could help their diet, and when they ate more naturally according to what they needed personally, then they got better, not just through psychotherapy, not just through all the other things that we were using naturally, acupuncture or rehabilitation and exercise, but when they changed their diet, they felt better and their digestion got better and a whole range of physical and emotional symptoms resolved.
When we think of traditional medicine, would most clinicians think of the digestive problems as a byproduct from the mental trauma or the mental distress that the patient's in?
Well, we know that digestion takes place in a state of relaxation. And I think it's probably why we have such an epidemic of GERD and colitis and digestive problems, because of all the stress people are under. The nervous system has to be relaxed for the enzymes to flow. And so we know that, for example, colitis. In the old days in mental health, we used to treat people by helping them relax and to breathe to help their gut, to help their colitis. But now the revolution in this field is that we understand the gut is also called our second brain. We know that all the neurotransmitters in our brain are actually made in the gut. And so when we treat the gut, for example, with fermented foods or with probiotics, probiotic supplements, that it actually improves colitis, but it also includes the anxiety that goes with colitis. So we've often seen colitis and anxiety go together, and we thought, well, just relax and your colitis will get better. But now we know, treat the gut and the anxiety gets better too. So they work together. And the second brain is communicating to the first brain.
There's a big section of the book talking about understanding that second brain and what, I guess, your digestive system needs. And it's pretty good at communicating to the brain. Sometimes we don't choose the right foods based on that. But you write that the digestive system will create a system of cravings or whatever to hopefully get the food it needs.
Yes, I do think at a very deep level, if we tune in, we can get in touch with what it is we need for ourselves. And I think doing that with a professional helps too. For example, we know there's a big anti-gluten craze right now. And then there's a gluten backlash, too. The fact is, there are a number of people who are allergic to gluten and have very serious effects from it, including depression and very serious chronic joint and neurological and gut problems. But then there's a whole other section of people who are sensitive to gluten. And indeed, gluten creates an opiate reaction in the body in some of these sensitive people. That's why some people feel drugged and actually use a lot of wheat to drug themselves, and yet they don't know why they're addicted. You're never really addicted to carrots. I've never met anyone addicted to eating too many carrots and lettuce. It's addiction to wheat. And that's because wheat can create these opiate reactions. Now, not everyone has these reactions, but understanding that wheat and gluten can create depression and joint problems is very important, because if you don't, then you're taking antidepressants, you're taking NSAIDs to treat the symptoms, when in fact it may be that you're sensitive to gluten, which is tearing up your gut like a torn sponge and creating all of these other health symptoms that then you're medicating, and then the NSAIDs cause problems in your digestive system on top of that, and on the cycle goes, and it's hard to get off that. So it is important to soothe the gut and to understand what helps the gut. And the best foods for the gut are fermented foods. And I mean real fermented foods like pickle from the farmer's market or sauerkraut or real yogurt that's made within a day or two, not your store-bought yogurts. And that can begin you on the journey. The other thing I talk about in the book is the use of these nutritional supplements as well. Diet is enough, but it's also, it's sufficient, but it's often not enough. You sometimes need these additional supplements to help you restore your gut and mental health.
Now, a big part of the book is planning menus. It seems like that could be a real challenge when you have a family who might have different needs. Going back to the beginning of our conversation of oxidizers that process digestion in different ways.
Absolutely. You may have a carnivore and a vegetarian in the same family. Remember, we are the product of our parents, and we're the combination of them. And so you will have different needs in the family and also at different life stages. I always keep two crock pots going in my kitchen. In our busy lives, I find it's really one of the simplest ways to prepare foods. One of them is a crock pot full of vegetables and vegetable broths that I've got simmering that I can use as a base for making a soup, for example. The other, I've got bones cooking, making a bone broth. Bone broth is one of the most important foods, if you're a carnivore, of course, for mental health. It's very rich in glycine, which is an amino acid that's very good for mood. And it's also very inexpensive food medicine. Not everyone can afford huge quantities of organic animal protein. And so marrow bones are a wonderful source of amino acids for the brain, which after all are the building blocks of neurotransmitters. And so blenders and crock pots, I think, make it very easy to plan menus and to be able to address the needs of your family.
You've actually said that the crock pot is probably the most important piece of equipment in your kitchen.
I think so, in large part because it allows you to cook food slowly. It allows you to put food in the crock pot at midnight when you go to sleep, or 10 p.m., whatever time, and wake up the next morning. Oats, for example, oats are one of the most important anti-anxiety foods. And I don't mean the quick oats that you put in the microwave. Get some good Scottish oats and put them in your crock pot. And you can soak some dried fruit and then add some dried fruit and your raw almonds to it. And you've got a nice sweetened, no sugar, oats as a nice anti-anxiety relaxing food, which, by the way, is best eaten at night, not in the morning. And so you've got lots of options for quick foods, but that are cooked as whole foods.
My guest today is Leslie Korn. She specializes in integrative medicine and mental health nutrition. She's the founder of the Center for Traditional Medicine and the author of The Good Mood Kitchen, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as you're talking about various ingredients, I noticed throughout the book, and whether you're eating at a restaurant or even home preparation, when you're talking about raw ingredients, and especially in meats, processed meats, mass-produced meats, throughout the book, there's all these tips about wild salmon, fresh-caught fish as opposed to farm fish. How big a difference does that make, a grass-fed bison meat as opposed to your traditional beefsteak? How big a difference does that make?
I think it makes a big difference. But let's think of changing our diet along a spectrum. You can't necessarily go from eating hot dogs to sipping on kombucha in one fell swoop. We're changing our palate. A lot of these heavy foods, these processed foods, change our ability to taste, and that affects the choices we make too. For example, when someone's heavily salting their food, they can't often perceive the sodium that's in celery, and it doesn't taste like much. But once you stop doing a lot of that excess salt, you can. So when I'm working with people, I want to work with them where they are. And so if someone is making a change from fast food and eating out a lot, poor quality foods, for example, then I'm going to work with them very gently to start getting some better quality meats. But let's consider economics as a factor too. The reason I don't like commercially raised animal proteins, as an example, or non-organically raised vegetables and fruits, is they're very high in pesticides and also what are called endocrine disruptors. They alter our endocrine system, which alters our cognitive function. It changes our mood. I mentioned earlier the role of aspartame, these artificial sweeteners, and their effects on our brain neurons. And so I want to work gently with someone to start changing over their diet and making good choices. We've got lots of hormones that are added to foods. For example, one of the easiest changes to make is buying farm eggs. Find a farm near you. Find the farmer, grow, or have some chickens in your backyard. Eggs are a perfect food for the brain and the body. I recommend at least 2 eggs a day. If you can get any kind of egg, great, but I want people to move a little bit more toward eggs without hormones and that haven't been commercially raised as well. And of course, we do want to care for the welfare of our animals that are giving us their bounty as well.
Well, you know, anybody who's ever had farm-raised eggs where they're actually eating bugs, the chickens are eating bugs, and, you know, eating outside rather than cornmeal and mass-produced, you can see it when you open the egg. It's a bright orange yolk as opposed to that pale yellow that you're used to seeing. You can see a difference in the quality of the food.
Yes, indeed.
Well, there's a lot of good information in this book, The Good Mood Kitchen, Simple Recipes and Nutrition Tips for Emotional Balance. Leslie, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, Rich, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much.
Leslie Korn is a clinical traumatologist specializing in mental health, nutrition, and integrative medicine. She's the author of The Good Mood Kitchen, Simple Recipes and Nutrition Tips for Emotional Balance. It's published by Norton. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.